The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent
sports
columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A billion-dollar industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. You know, for me especially, this is a special time of the year. The beginning of July means the beginning of Wimbledon. They've changed the tennis calendar. It used to end on 4th of July weekend. Now it starts on the 2nd of July, and I will be there for the first week, which will be a thrill for me. It's the oldest tennis tournament in the world. It is the most prestigious. Center Court is my favorite venue to watch a sports event. And Mary Carrillo, who played there, who is a major champion herself, she and John McEnroe won the 1977 Mixed Open title at the French Open. She will be covering Wimbledon for the Tennis Channel. You see her amazing work on NBC for every Olympics, and she does great journalism as well for Real Sports. And she will discuss everything you need to know about the Wimbledon fortnight. But before we get started with Mary, a word from Gillette. Every morning I use my Gillette razor, I know when I'm getting a great shave. It's been a consistent part of my daily routine and my dad's for such a long time. My dad used a Gillette, so there was never anything else in our family. My ProGlide and Fusion Cream give me the close, comfortable shave I'm looking for. Gillette offers a variety of shaving products for every guy. The new Gillette 3 and Gillette 5 razors start at $7.99 and deliver even more options for every guy by offering trusted quality at an affordable price. The Gillette 3 and the Gillette 5 are both available in stores. For guys looking to get Gillette Performance delivered to their door, you can find Gillette 5 at GilletteOnDemand.com. Check it out today. That's GilletteOnDemand.com. Welcome back to the Mike Lupica Podcast. As Wimbledon begins, we are lucky enough today to have one of my dearest and oldest friends on the planet. And I actually think that I used to, in an offhanded way, insult Mary Carrillo by saying she is one of the best female broadcasters on the planet. She is one of the great broadcasters on the planet for Real Sports, for the Tennis Channel, doing the Olympics on NBC. And she is, if the business we are in is communicating, she is one of the great communicators that we have. And she is off to cover Wimbledon for the Tennis Channel. And she joins us today. Hey, Mayor.
I humbly accept that introduction, Michael. Thank you very much.
And Mary, before we get to other pressing tennis matters,
okay,
I just wanted you to know, it's unrelated to Wimbledon, but I think I have made a breakthrough on my serve.
Oh, God. We really have to discuss your serve again? That cockamamie little serve? It looks like you're trying to serve your way out of a phone booth serve? That serve? That serve? Are you sure, Michael?
I haven't seen
that serve. It's been a while, but I remember it with deep regret.
Not deep regret, deep humor. But let me just say, it's a work in progress, okay?
Okay.
And Mary, one other thing, because I don't know if everybody is aware of your tennis bona fides. I know Federer has won 20 majors in singles, and Nadal's won 17, and Serena's won 23, whatever it is. But Mary, isn't winning a mixed doubles title at a major to you as great an achievement as there is in tennis?
It is. I'll tell you what, winning the 1977 mixed doubles at Roland Garros, that is the single hardest thing to do in my sport.
And by the way, having to carry that schlub you were playing with across the finish line.
Whatever happened to John McEnroe? Michael, as you're well aware, it's a trivia question, but that was John McEnroe's first major title. A less fun fact is that it was my last major title.
Mary, let's start with the men. And you have an interesting take on even the wonderful renaissance that we have seen from Federer and Nadal over the last year and a half. And even though it's been great for them, you don't necessarily believe it's been great for men's tennis.
No, I adore the rivalry they have. They played what many of us, including myself, feel is the greatest tennis match of all time at Wimbledon 10 years ago, a five-setter finally won by Rafa Nadal. And here it is, a decade later, they're still number one and two in the world. So I appreciate their magnificence and their commitment and their efforts, Michael. But they've won, between them, they've won the last six majors. The youngest active Grand Slam champions are Marin Cilic and Juan Martín del Potro, and they're both pushing 30. So all I really feel is that at some point, and maybe it'll happen at Wimbledon this year, though I'm not feeling it, you know, we have somebody younger winning majors. And frankly, Michael, I don't feel that Roger Federer, who's won the championship eight times, which is remarkable, I don't feel he's playing as well in 2018 as he played in 2017 when he won the Australian Open and then Wimbledon. And Wimbledon, he won without dropping a set. He just looks like he's playing a little older, and he's crankier. I hesitate to call him Grandpa Simpson, but there is a certain...
Wait a minute. Did you just... Excuse me. Wait, hold on. Just stop right there. Did you just call a 20-time major singles champion Grandpa Simpson?
Well, maybe I did. See, this is what happens when I talk to a close personal friend.
Mary, let me ask you this about Nadal.
I don't think he's the guy to beat at Wimbledon, by the way.
Okay, so let me ask you about
Let me say that. I'm just saying, I think it'll be harder for him this year. I think it's been harder for him this year. He won the Australian Open, beat Marin Cilic in five sets, and, you know, then he's been quiet. He took off the whole clay court season again, which Rafa Nadal utterly dominated. It's been a very interesting year, and as a function of age, they're both picking their spots and deciding what to play and what not to play. But everybody's showing up for the Wimbledon fortnight. Even Andy Murray is in the draw again. And Stan Wawrinka. And now all these guys who have been hurt, you know. So it'll be I honestly feel, you know, at the French Open, there were a lot of great storylines, not a lot of great tennis. There are plenty of really good storylines on the men's and women's side of Wimbledon. And I'm hoping that there'll be some great tennis as well.
We're talking to Mary Carrillo on the Gillette Hotline. And again, I probably watch more of the Tennis Channel than any person ought to. But
you are an alert viewer, Michael.
And it's lucky for Mary Carrillo because I'm able to share my insights on any match that she's broadcasting while she's broadcasting it. And if you haven't watched the Tennis Channel or you don't have it and you can get it, you ought to get it Mary's heard me say this before and I've written this before. They are like the kids who have taken over the principal's office. It is such a fun, it's a fun network. It's especially around the majors. They did an amazing job at the French Open. So over the Wimbledon fortnight, if you got access to it, watch Mary and all of her Mary pranksters on the Tennis Show. Let me talk about Nadal at Wimbledon. I know that there have been times when he's been hurt, and that accounts for his poor performance. But there have been times when he showed up healthy, Mayor, and he just it didn't make it to the second week. I know that he's making the transition from clay. I know it's not his best surface, but he has won there. How do you account for his sketchy record over the last several years?
It's been since 2011. That was the last time he had a quality finish at Wimbledon. He's won it two times. He was in five straight finals at Wimbledon. Michael, when you look at the guys who have beaten him over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, they're big guys who just take the tennis away from the match.
Right.
Whether it's Lucas Rosal or Nick Kyrgios or Dustin, this German guy with this huge game, you know, he lost 15-13 in the fifth last year, a remarkable match against Gilles Muller. There are guys who, you know, he has a much better mentality, a much better sensibility for clay than grass. On clay, you know, you build your points brick by brick, and every single point counts. And there's this accretion against Nadal of pressure and relentlessness and high bouncing balls. And so on clay, I mean, that is his sensibility. That makes on grass. In 40 seconds, Michael, a match changes.
Right.
You know, two big swipes of a racket, and you've broken it. or, you know, I mean, happens in a hurry on grounds. And I think that just sort of goes against everything Rafa Nadal believes in. And again, as he ages, it's getting harder and harder. This is a guy who wants utter control. He wants control of where his water bottles are. He wants control of how much time he takes in between points. He's got to, you know, pick at his shorts. This is a guy who, that is how he wants to play. And on grass, you got a guy who's got not much more than a huge serve. And a guy like Rafa is, I think he gets frustrated, befuddled. You can hustle him off of a grass court in a way you can on any other court. And I think, so honestly, and this sounds ridiculous that the number one player in the world needs a friendly draw, but that's what Rafa needs. He's got to avoid those big dudes. And once he gets into the second week and the grass gets all, you know, it slows down and it turns into dust and dirt, then he's in better shape. But he's got to get himself into the second week.
Talking to my pal, Mary Carrillo, one of the best broadcasters, not just tennis, on the planet. Mayor, what is more surprising to you, what we have seen from these two guys over the last year and a half? Now that they're back to being 1 and 2 and they're dancing this dance with 1 and 2, are you more surprised that Nadal came back from where he was to be number one again, or that Roger came back from where he was to be number one again?
I think Roger was probably the slightly bigger surprise to me. Because he'd gone a couple of years without winning a major. You know, Rafa was always going to show up in Paris and be a threat. And you know, Roger had never, there was a couple of years ago when it looked like he really was slowing down. He underplayed the idea that his back was bad. So for him to take off 2 years ago, to take off a whole second half of the season and just relax and enjoy himself and get himself fit again, and then start winning majors again, that was a big surprise. With Rafa, you just know that the guy is going to grind until he can't anymore. So I think that was, but part of this also, Michael, is the fact that a lot of guys around those two have been hurt. They've been injured a lot. And that's been a problem with whether it's Andy Murray or Stan Wawrinka. I mean, guys who have won majors, you know, who haven't won Martin Del Potro, you know, We've been missing some of the big guys. And again, that's why I'm very happy, though I don't expect some of these guys to be 100%. I'm glad they're at least back in the conversation again, you know?
Talking to Mary Carrillo on the Gillette Hotline. Okay, let us talk about the mystery guest. Because it's fascinating, Mary. I was at Wimbledon 2 years ago. In the first week, watching Novak Djokovic play.
I haven't even mentioned him yet.
Okay, so again, turn back the clock 2 years ago. I wrote a column the first week of Wimbledon saying that maybe Djokovic was on his way to being the GOAT. Maybe he was on his way to winning more majors than anybody else had, because here was a guy who took on Nadal and Federer in their prime, passed them both, became number one in the world, had 4 majors he was holding at the time, was halfway to the calendar Grand Slam. And so, Mary, I don't want to get too technical with this question. What the hell happened to him?
Michael, I can't believe I forgot to even mention Novak until now you've brought him up.
No, he was on my list. He's right here. It was after my serve and Federer and Nadal. It was right there, Djokovic.
Okay, I'm glad you've made notations on that, what we should be talking about. Novak is, I mean, that was one of the great falls. Obviously, he had elbow surgery, and that contributed to it. It sounds very much like he had his own personal problems in his marriage. Yep. And it seems like he's rebounded from that. He's got defiance back, which was, I always thought, the single biggest attribute that Novak Djokovic brought onto a court. He always has had a lot to prove, and he's always been willing to prove it. And then at last year's French Open, he tanked the last set to Dominic Thiem in the quarters of Roland Garros. That's when I knew this guy, we weren't going to see this guy for a while. He's back and he's playing well. He doesn't have a game that looks dazzling necessarily on grass because his serve isn't huge. But Michael, he's spot serving unbelievably well in the last couple of weeks. I've been watching him play on the grass court tune-ups. I'm taking him very seriously. I think he's tired of not being the guy. He really likes being the guy. And And, you know, he's playing, obviously, for him to insinuate himself in the midst of two of the greatest players of all time, both of whom are revered universally. And that's not something, I think that's always something that Novak Djokovic wanted as well. He wanted that kind of, more than the fame and the acclaim, he continues to want to be loved, you know, outside of Serbia, where they do adore. So that fall was, that was an absolute, I didn't see that one coming at all.
It was tiger-like, Mayor. And again, this isn't whataboutism. Everybody's different. Every sport is different. But it was as stunning a fall that it came out of nowhere the way it did as Tiger's fall was.
Right. Well, he wins the French Open. And at that point, now he's holding all four majors. The French was the one that had always gotten away from him.
Right.
And then he goes to Wimbledon. And in the court, in those, that transition, those few weeks, he was a different looking guy. Lost to Sam Querrey on center court and then just continued to go away. And yeah, it was, I mean, clearly a lot of that was emotional. Clearly he had lost his way. But he's back playing again. He's reassembled an awful lot of the team that had gotten into where he was. He's fit. His elbow seems to be fine. And he's got his hunger back and his ambition. And again, that great quality of his with defiance, it's nice to see. I think he could have a pretty good run.
Mayor, we're talking to Mayor Carrillo on the Gillette Hotline. Mayor, I left Wimbledon the day I was watching it flying home when he finished that loss to Querrey. But we had seen top players get bounced out of Wimbledon the first week before. So I didn't think that this was, a sign of the apocalypse. Okay. And then he still made it to the finals of the U.S. Open 2.5 months later. And about a set and a half into that match, I'm watching with my wife, and I turned to her and I said, if you didn't know anything about anything, who would you think is the best player out there today? Yeah. And it was so clearly Wawrinka, and that's when I said, wait, this is not the same guy anymore.
Yeah, I think obviously we watch an utter comeback from Roger Federer. We saw the same thing from Rafa Nadal. I'm waiting to see the same thing from Serena, and I'm hoping to see the same thing from Victoria Azarenka, who won the Australian Open two times. But there are comebacks, Michael, and there are come all the way backs. And we're talking about people who are in their 30s now.
Yeah.
When you look at Andy Murray, who's had a couple of different surgeries, when you look at Serena, who's going to be 37 this year, when you look at Stan Wawrinka, who's had a couple of knee surgeries in the last 12 months, I don't think it's fair for us to assume that some of these players can make come all the way backs. I do think Djokovic can do it. He seems to be lit again. He seems to care again. And that's a good sign, but it's tough. Michael, it's tough out there. One of the things also that Rafa gets aggravated about is that everybody's hitting so hard and with so much spin.
Right.
And the last thing in the world Rafa Nadal wants is to be robbed of time. And so apart from all those guys and the fact that, and women, and the fact that they're older, and now you've got very, very hard-hitting players, that makes it even tougher.
Mayor, can Rafa still win Wimbledon receiving serve from the royal box?
Well, he makes adjustments. In a way, maybe more subtle than the way Bjorn Borg adjusted when he decided he wanted to be more than a French Open champion. He wanted to win Wimbledon within a matter of weeks. And this is back when grass played a lot differently than clay. Now there's a homogenization to all the surfaces
right
in tennis. But I mean, all of a sudden, the first time that Borg won Wimbledon, the first of five in a row, he beats up his serve and he played tighter to the baseline. And, you know, Rafa can do the same thing. He's got a lefty serve. And he does get up tighter to the baseline when he's returning on grass. His big problem is, again, he has faced the guys from Lucas Rosal to Dustin Brown to Gilles Muller to Nick Kyrgios. It doesn't matter where you stand against that kind of serve. they're going to get their aces. And there's nothing more frustrating to a guy like Rafa than not to even get a racket on the ball. That just goes against everything he believes in.
Mary, you just brought up a guy who nobody would think of as being a creative player. And I know he was well coached, and that's Borg. Okay. And I was lucky enough to be at Wimbledon. So were you. I saw a piece of every one of his 41 straight victories there after he had less time to adjust from clay than the modern players do. Mayor, I remember the year he whomped Jimmy. Remember, Jimmy said I'd follow him to the ends of the earth, and then he followed him to the ends of the earth, and I think he lost 2-2 and 3 in the next Wimbledon final. And that was the day, all of a sudden, Borg starts using a slice backhand approach, and we're all sitting there in the press box that day, and Bud said, okay, where did that come from?
Yeah. No, exactly. And I still think one of the hardest things in the world is to win Roland Garros and Wimbledon a month apart, and Borg did that 3 times. You know, that's a remarkable effort.
All right, let's go to the women's side, would you care to weigh in, because even people in outer space have discussed this by now, on the great Serena seeding controversy from the French, and now she's seeded 25 going into Wimbledon.
Michael, she's ranked in the 180s. So clearly she deserved the seeding. The woman has won this thing 7 times. I cannot think of 24 other women who deserve to be seated ahead of Serena.
right.
I take issue with that. And again, she hasn't played much, and she hasn't been seen practicing much in recent days. And she had that pec muscle problem, at the French, which means that So she had a couple of really nice looking wins. She pulled out of the tournament. So we don't know her fitness level. I still would have seen her a lot higher than 25. And the great thing is Maria Sharapova is 24. And she deserves to be seated. Of course she does. She's made a terrific effort to come back. Another one of those, can she come all the way back? But, I mean, 25? I'm glad they seated her at all. I mean, the French didn't even seed her. The U.S. Open will surely seed her. But I like Serena's chances. If she's in a draw, I'm going to be paying attention to that section.
Mary Carrillo is our guest on the Mike Lubica podcast. Much more with Mary after this from Buffalo Wild Wings. A great man once said, baseball is the wing of sports. It didn't really make sense at the time, and it doesn't really make sense now, but we're inclined to agree because baseball is great and wings are great, and you can find both at Buffalo Wild Wings. And because baseball has fly balls and wings can help you fly, well, we don't know. Maybe the man was saying baseball is America's game and wings are America's chicken. Now, that actually makes some sense, but don't dwell on it. The point is Buffalo Wild Wings has baseball. They've got delicious wings. All that's missing is you. You come in for the wings and you stay for the baseball. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. Maybe there'll even be a Wimbledon tennis match on. Mary, I look at the rest of the field, okay, and not just Sharapova, Halep, Muggsy, as I call Muguruza, Wozy, Muggsy. I don't know why it just makes me laugh. Wozy, Sloane Stephens,
right.
Zika the Shrieker. This is interesting as the men could be. This could be a vastly interesting women's side of Wimbledon.
Could not agree with you more. If the seeds hold, if the projections hold, it could be a lot of fun. Halep would play Kvitova, who's won it 2 times. Halep has finally won her first major in Paris,
which was great, Mayor. It was a great drama.
It was fun stuff. Hey, by the way, 5-time Wimbledon champion Venus Williams is also in the draw. You should probably keep an eye on her. I think it's going to be, I'm not just saying this because I'm leaving in a couple of hours. I think it could be a terrific Wimbledon. I really do.
Mary, when you look at the young guy, you were talking about young guys in men's tennis. Okay, we'll go back over to that side for a second. Of these three guys, which one is more likely, do you think, or most likely, to make a deep run into the second week? Chorich?
Give me my number, my names.
Chorich, Sasha Zverev. Yeah, everybody's All-American. And Dominic Thiem.
Well, you know what? Federer and Chorich are destined to meet. They're both in the top half of the draw. And, of course, Borna Chorich is the young Croatian guy who beat him in the Halle final on grass.
That's a great match. It was great to watch.
It was a great match. I love Borna Chorich. I really do. He's just a very hardworking, disciplined, well-taught, earnest guy. And again, I'm not saying Grandpa Simpson is in real trouble, but I can't believe we're calling
Roger
him that
Federer.
Now, Michael. Why do you do this to me? There are, like, I think Dominic Thiem, I admire him very much, but he tries to hit his way out of trouble on every surface. And I would love to see him start using a little bit more guile, a little bit more variety. On grass, Michael, we've had this conversation before. The best athletes in the world win Wimbledon, whether it's Martina winning it 9 times or Roger winning it 8 times, Serena winning it 7 times, Steffi Graf winning it 7 times, you know, Pete Sampras. We're talking about tremendous athletes. And that means that they have to not just be great physically, but they have to have agile minds, the way that Bjorn Borg showed when he won it 5 years in a row.
Right.
The way McEnroe could play on grass. You have to make a lot of adjustments. You have to be willing to do that. So that's what I'd like to see more from in Dominic Thiem. Sasha Zverev is a force of nature. He still sometimes can't get out of his own way. He gets frustrated. And
but he fights harder now. Work. Don't you think he's fighting harder now, Mayor?
I love the way... Look, I'm a big fan of his. I just think that he can get angry and frustrated, and he still needs to work on his volley for grass because he wants to get in behind his strokes. I'm a big fan of his. I mean, Nick Kyrgios has more talent. It's spilling out his sides. That's another guy who, you know, the form he's shown in the last several weeks shows how devastatingly good he can be on grass. He can also be a total knucklehead. You know, he got fined for making a rude, obscene sexual gesture on a changeover last week for no good reason.
He's the new Nastassi, except Nastassi won majors.
Yeah, well, I think it's possible that Nick can do that as well. Again, this is a guy who he's what you want to call a rugged individualist, Michael.
Wait a minute. Kyrgios is a rugged individualist and Roger Federer is Grandpa Simpson? Really? Really?
How good are you at editing out pieces of this podcast?
No, but if we did that, it wouldn't be you. Okay, Mayor, I say this all the time. We've had this conversation before, okay? And I always say, can you imagine if just one of these three guys had been an American? Federer, Nadal, or Djokovic. Mary, we live in an age, I don't think people process this enough, where three men have won 49 combined major singles championships. And you never say never in sports, but we can say never about this. Nothing like this will ever happen again in the sport. Nothing even close to this will ever. And again, it frames what Djokovic did. And I don't mean to harp on this, but he took them both on in their primes and beat them.
Exactly. No. And what he did, even more remarkable for me, like Nadal always had a plan against Federer. He still always has a plan against Roger Federer. And Roger's had the better of him in the last couple of years, but that's part of that is because they haven't played each other on clay, where I still like Nadal every day.
Right.
But what Djokovic was able to do to make Nadal shake, to make Nadal question himself, Djokovic knew how to play against Rafa Nadal. He had a plan, and he was able to use it because Nadal's huge lefty forehand to Djokovic's backhand. Djokovic's backhand is sturdy and aggressive in its own right, and it held up. Djokovic was able to do, and Djokovic, obviously, he played and beat Andy Murray and Roger Federer. The guy was the guy. He really was a remarkable, remarkable number one. Because he took on everybody, and he knew how to. He went from offense to defense better than anybody. His return game was incredible. It will take a lot for him to get back all of that. I still think he can do it. I don't think he can dominate. I don't. I don't think he's the kind of guy who can hold all four majors at the same time. It hadn't been done since labor anyway, in 1969. But it is a wonderful time for tennis. It is these are glory days. There's no doubt about it.
It's if you love the sport, and you know, and Mary knows this. My first chance to be a big time sports columnist was because of tennis. It was because Bud Collins took me under his wing when I was working nights at the Boston Globe. I love tennis. I covered it for year after year after year. I saw Borg and McEnroe. I saw Arthur Ashe win. I saw Jimmy win. By the way, I have a tennis pro friend from Los Angeles named David Boyd, who is kind of raised my kids in tennis. He goes out to Eastern Long Island in the summer. And I did a podcast with Jimmy Connors about a month ago. And David sent me the funniest text. He goes, I'm out here now. He's English. He says, I'm listening to your podcast with Jimmy. And he said, I love Jimmy, but you have to say that if it were a drinking game, for every bit of praise he gives to modern players, no one would ever get drunk.
Yeah, but Michael, and you know this, you know who he's always admired, Rafa Nadal.
Yep. Oh, no, Mary, you know, it was a throwaway line. I'm on the foot. Mary knows this, and she's been nice enough to quote it. I'm talking to Connors one day about Nadal, and a throwaway line. He says, yeah, he plays like he's broke. And it became the most definitive thing anybody ever said about Rafa. And, you know, I said this to David Boyd. We were having this text exchange. Jimmy wasn't as good as a lot of these other guys, but if you had to make a list of the most important tennis figures, he's as important as anybody because he completely changed the profile of the sport in this country.
Yeah, he did. I give him great credit for doing that. There are a couple of Americans who've made major impact beyond the tennis court, and Jimmy certainly brought in the casual fan, and Billie Jean King, obviously. Arthur Ashe on and off the court. We've been very, very lucky. And quite frankly, and I keep kidding about Roger Federer. I've never met an athlete with more grace than Roger Federer on and off the court.
And nobody likes being Roger more than he likes being Roger. The comparison I always make, and they're completely different elegance wise. He likes being Roger and being the king as much as Arnold Palmer liked being the king in golf.
That's exactly right. There are some people who are it suits them to be who they are. And that's exactly how Roger is. Again, I do think that he's things are bothering him more this year than they bothered him last year. We've seen him get testy on the court, question calls, you know, just things that you don't normally expect from the great Roger Federer. But what also happens is when he shows up at Wimbledon, he is so revered there that I think that will sort of calm him down and make him feel like he's in the right place and that all is well again. And I mentioned again, he won that championship last year without dropping a set.
The
guy knows what to do on center court at Wimbledon.
Mayor, I've asked you this before and I actually can't remember what the answer is. Pete at his best on a fast court against Roger at his best on a fast court. Who's your money on?
You know, I'm glad it's a great question because I honestly think that Pete Sampras has been lost in the midst.
Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing?
I love Pete Sampras. I absolutely adore Pete. I think Roger, I mean, and they had different strengths, but Pete, again, jocks win Wimbledon. Pete was the ultimate grass court jock. And he was great on hard courts as well. He only, you know, obviously he left the French begging. He the best he ever did was get to the semis in 96. But we watched Pete beat Roger at Wimbledon.
Yep.
And then he lost to Tim Henman in the next round, but he was only a teenager, but Roger beat Pete. I should say. Pete was older, obviously. Roger was very young and fearless, and he served in Bali on just about every point, which he doesn't do anymore, which no one does anymore. I miss that. I think if Pete were playing today, he would still insist on serving in Bali behind his first and second serve, because that's how he used to win Wimbledon. So it would be a totally different clash of styles, Pete and Roger against compete against Roger and Rafa.
Yep.
I wouldn't mind watching that at all.
Meaning, Mayor, remember when Pete and Roger did that cockamamie money grab old guy, young guy tour a few years ago? And I think I called you up one night and I said, there were always a few points in every one of those matches. And I said, the only guy who could understand what the other guy was doing was the other guy. You could see that this was a club. They were in a club sometimes you think only they have been in. Nothing against Rafa and nothing against Djokovic and Laver and all the other guys. But there was a level of beauty to the way those two guys play tennis that is like nothing that I've ever seen on the men's side.
And Michael, you know, Pete used to talk about that. He used to say that all he wanted was to be, he wanted to be one of the untouchables.
Yep.
And in that very tiny group of people, he was including Labor, and he was including Rosewell. Like, he was including the all-time greats. That's who he wanted to be like, and Roger is certainly among them as well. But when Pete finally won the U.S. Open, he'd gone begging for a while at the majors. The last tournament he plays, he wins the U.S. Open, number 14, and he decides, you know, mic drop, I'm going to leave the sport on this high because that record should last a long time.
Yeah.
A couple of years later, he was in trouble. And now it's been surpassed. And it's been surpassed by Rafa, and it's been surpassed by Roger. But I honestly think that people forget what an unbelievable player Pete Sampras was.
Mayor, there are moments, and I always make this distinction in all my years of writing, that when I talk about character, I'm talking about athletic character. I'm not talking about people's real character, okay? But there are moments in people's careers where their athletic character shines through. Obviously, the day Pete won his last Open, in that famous game against Agassi, in that long game in the fourth set, where you knew that he knew and Agassi knew, and we all knew that if it went five sets, he was going to lose to Andre Agassi, okay? He made his stand, and this tennis pro friend of mine from L.A., who's a huge Agassi guy, he can take you through that game point by point by point by point, okay? And the other moment where we saw Roger's athletic character was at this match that you know I'm fixed on, the Australian Open of January of 2017, when tennis history changed in about 27 minutes. And you were nice enough to reference a column I wrote, but I know that you thought the same thing because he's down 3-1 and he wins the last five games, okay? And we know that everything that's happened since, and I, you know, I'm going over old ground, but if Rafa holds on that day, and he's up a break in the fifth set, okay?
Yep.
Right now, going into Wimbledon, and you don't know that everything would have transpired the way it has, it would be 19 majors for Fed and 18 for Rafa. That half hour is as significant a half hour as there's ever been in men's tennis.
I think that's true. I truly believe it. And you know, people get aggravated when everyone is so willing to, so quick to say Roger's the GOAT, you know, and there's nobody like him. And I mean, the fact that he still has a big losing record against Rafa Nadal, I bring that up and people get crazy no matter what you say.
Well, Chad, let me tell people what Mary Carrillo famously said about this rivalry. And it's one of the great lines ever in tennis. How can you be the greatest player of all time if there's a guy in your time you can't beat?
Right. I feel strongly about that. And Andy Roddick, the great Andy Roddick, who's so smart and so funny, Andy just keeps reminding people, why don't we wait till, you know, why don't we wait till it's all over before we decide?
Right.
Why don't you finish a book before you decide how it ended?
Yeah.
I mean, Andy Roddick is so smart about that. And it's amazing. All you've got, if I compliment Roger Federer on something, the Rafa lovers go after. If I compliment Rafa, the Roger people. And the great thing about it is their fan bases are so bloodthirsty and so. and Roger and Rafa really like each other.
Right.
I mean, like saying, guys, you know, they're both really very special, very talented, very important people. You know, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive that if you love Rafa, you hate Roger. The other way around, they don't hate each other.
We're talking with the great Mary Carrillo on the Mike Lupica podcast. More with Mayor in a minute. But first, a word from Geico. there's a quick way you could save money. Just switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about a homeowner's or renter's insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. We're talking to Mary Carillo, and there's just no way to set up Wimbledon better than talking to Mary about tennis. Okay, so speaking of rivalries, and I know that now they're a buddy movie, but Chris and Martina weren't always a buddy movie.
No, they weren't. They were not Butch and Sundance
the whole time, Mayor. They weren't, even though now there's this gauzy, loving way that I made her better and she made... They wanted to just, be, you know, to use one of your old phrases, they each wanted to throw the other one down a flight of stairs.
Yes. well, look, more often than not, they played each other, 80 times? I mean, they played each other more
it's
than
crazy.
Any two tennis players have played one another. So, invariably, somebody was going to be crying in the locker room, right. Almost every weekend. But more often than not, I truly do believe that they both had the great grace to be comforting the other. I think the teams around, like Martina for a while, had a team around her that said, you have to hate her and you can't stop talking to her. And Chrissy was like, wait, what's happening here? And I think Martina regrets that for a while, that's how she treated the rivalry and how she treated Chris. They are terrific friends now. They're both very, I'm crazy about both of them for all different reasons.
Mayor, out of all, your time watching tennis is my time watching tennis. Okay. Out of all the players we've seen, And this has been, it's been an amazing, it's moving up on, you know, it's a half century of open tennis, and it's been an amazing time in sport. When you look at Chris, Mary, didn't she do more with what she had than anybody else did, including Jimmy with what they had?
I know what you're saying. She doesn't look, especially because she was going up against Martina so much.
Right.
And then Steffi Graf, and then some other, terrific. She was a terrific athlete. She had remarkable timing, great balance, beautiful strokes, incredible discipline. And, in her time, there was no one mentally tougher than Chris Evert.
Right.
So, yes, of course. I think she gets overlooked as well. I don't have a problem with people saying that Serena Williams – with 23 majors, and maybe she gets 24 and ties Margaret Court in a couple of weeks. I don't mind people saying that. I think a lot of people said it before, years before it was true.
Right.
Because I remember how good Graf was, and I remember how good Martina was and Chrissy was. But Michael...
And Selys!
That's what I was getting to. Michael, I have never seen a better match player than Monica Selys, ever.
Oh, my God. She's good.
And obviously, she got cut down. She got stabbed and lost the fearlessness that made her so great. But Michael, I used to do Monica Seles matches where the first set would be over and we'd throw up the stats and she would have in one set, 21 winners and two errors,
Yeah.
I mean, that's how good she was. And that's how, and again, Serena has those kind of numbers and winners too, but she litters the stat sheet with errors and it's just not even the same. So I wish and I mourn the fact that Monica Seles isn't remembered more in all-time greats because she had to end her career with 9 majors. She would have had a lot more, Michael. And that would have meant that Graf had a lot less.
That's the thing about Serena.
Monica did it in Graf's name.
Mayor, and that's the thing about Serena. And believe me, I'm happy to have lived in a time to see her do what she's done and write the story with her sister, a great American story. Okay. No one can ever diminish that. But the toughest opponent she ever had when you add it all up was her sister. Okay.
Yeah.
So she didn't have a Martina and the way Martina had, the way Chris had Martina, and she didn't have a Chris the way Martina had Chris. And you can only play who you play. I get that. Okay.
Yeah.
But it does skew the numbers slightly.
Excuse the numbers, and I just want to say, Monica Seles for the ferocity of her strokes. She never took a point off, ever. You never felt like, all right, she's going to relax now because she's got it. She's up a break. She's up 2 break. She never took off a point, and I really admired her about that. The great rivalry with Serena, I always felt, was going to be Justine Henin.
Yep.
And there was a year where Justine knocked her out of 3 major quarterfinals in a row. But then Justine went away, you know. And again, Sharapova obviously is a huge name, but Maria, you know, Serena's won 23 majors. Maria's won 5. And again, she's only beaten her twice, Maria. And the last time that happened was the end of 2004. So, and again, you're right. You can only play the people in front of you. But that's why I think if we're going to talk rivalries, which is what we've been talking about with Rafa and Roger, and what could have been a great rivalry with Roger and Pete, Serena pretty much, she didn't have that. And by the way, she may have been even greater and won even more majors if she did have that.
Mayor,
keep that in mind, too.
Mayor, last week, a guy, Dan Jenkins, I used to love being at majors with Dan because he'd look up at the leaderboard on Sunday at the Open and he'd say, oh, yeah, there's some lurkers, okay? Marin Cilic is a lurker, okay? And you made such an interesting observation about this young man and how tough he is and how a tough country produced him. And it was I'd never thought of it that way. But talk a little bit about what you said about this guy.
I my main man, Marin, I was calling him that at the French Open because he was the third seed there. But clearly, you know, they wanted him gone in a hurry from the snow courts. So they kept putting him on center court, Court Philippe Chartres, and that's an honor for the number 3 seed, but it was at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
I was one of the 6 people watching that match, you know, those matches. And he did do them a couple of times in a row. This guy is tough. And let's face it, he got to the final of Wimbledon last year, and then blisters kept him from playing well. He broke down on the court against Roger Federer. He got to the final of the Australian Open this year. He just won a grass title at Queens last week. This guy is the goods. He's 6'6". He's got a terrific serve. And he comes from that part of the world. Anybody that comes from that Eastern Europe, we see it with Cilic. We see it with Borna Cioric. We see it with Novak Djokovic. We saw it with Monica Seles. These people have something to prove, Michael. And yep. they're very hardworking. And they're impactful. And I always take them seriously. I really do. I think Marin is, you know, it's funny because everyone loves Juan Martín del Potro. And he's a big guy, too, with a lot of the same, you know, he's got a big serve like Marin. He's got a huge forehand. So does Marin. His forehand's gotten a lot. Like, everyone adores Juan Martín del Potro. Marin is an awful lot like that Argentine guy.
Right.
And he just doesn't have the rep, you know. People don't like him the way they like del Potro. And that's fine, except you better keep your eye on Marin. he can play on any surface, and he works really hard, and I don't know, I like that guy.
Mary, I've got a few more questions for Mary Carillo, who's nice enough to join us on the day that she's leaving for the 2018 Wimbledon. We're sometimes trying to find Mary at Wimbledon is like you have a better chance sending a note in a bottle, okay? But Mayor, I say this to people all the time, and I you know, I've been in New York a long time, okay? And but if I had to pick one venue of all the big sports events I have ever seen, okay?
Okay.
I'd rather watch a match at Center Court Wimbledon. It's my favorite single sports venue, and I tell my sons have been lucky enough to go with me and my daughter and my wife. And every time I've ever walked through the gates, I say, this is like walking back into my youth. Okay. And the great thing about Wimbledon is all the improvements they make are great. Okay. It's as old as it is. They're extremely modern there. And this is a long way around to ask you a question, because I know that it's the 10th anniversary of Nadal and Federer. And there's a big fancy pants Tennis Channel movie from John Wertheim's book that drops, I think, on the Sunday night before Wimbledon starts. But I know that's called the greatest match of all time, but if you add up not just the quality of play, but who was in it and the importance of the match, is it really better than Borg-McEnroe?
I think I consider that a little bit more of a jump ball than most.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And but by the way, Michael, John McEnroe thinks that the Federer-Nadal match was better than his with Borg. And John McEnroe, look, his John's rival with Jimmy Connors, we remember how rough that was, and they truly disliked each other. And John McEnroe's rivalry with Lendl was every bit as, you know, those guys couldn't stand each other. John loved Borg, and he loved playing against Borg. And Borg brought out the glistening, luminous vest in John. And I thought that was a great match, too. What I agree with more than anything about that this conversation is the physical space of Wimbledon. There are some sporting venues, whether it's Augusta, golf, or Kentucky Derby, where the physical space makes everything much more meaningful and much bigger. And my last story about the center court Wimbledon, Mary Jo Fernandez told me this story. Her husband, Tony Gottsick, is Roger Federer's agent. And the first time that Roger beat Andy Roddick in the championship match at Wimbledon, there was a rain delay. And Roddick was playing great, and he was up a set. And it was just, you're thinking, oh, God, this is Andy's time. You know, he's got the game to beat anybody on grass, even Roger Federer. When they came back, Roger, of course, ends up beating Andy. And that night, over dinner, Mary Jo says to Roger, how did you turn that around after the rain delay? And Roger said, center court was so quiet, and that's the beauty of that cathedral, center court was so quiet that I could hear how hard Andy was breathing, and I knew he was nervous.
Oh.
that's pretty cool. You're not going to get quiet at the U.S. Open on Arthur Ashe Stadium, Michael. You're not going to get it. You get that. At Center Court Wimbledon.
I will be there on Tuesday afternoon with my youngest son, who loves tennis beyond anything that any 26-year-old who's not in the business loves. Mayor, I was just thinking, I don't know why what you just said made me think of it. I asked Chris one time what she thought about in the third set of a big match, whether it was against Martina or anybody else, what drove her?
Yes.
And she said, I always thought of what my opponent's face would look like at the net if I lost.
How about that?
These people are different. Yeah. They're different. I mean, not from you, Mary. You did win the 1977 mixed doubles with some guy that we lost track of, a partner we lost track of. I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah.
Mary, have a great Wimbledon. Thank you for doing this on the day that you're leaving. And as usual, you know, Zach and I may or may not see you at Wimbledon next week.
I'll be looking for Zach, Michael.
Mary Carrillo, you will watch her all of Wimbledon on the tennis channel, and you'll be glad that you did. This kind of conversation we have every single week on this podcast. That's why the numbers are just stupidly growing. Please download. Please subscribe to it. And I'll talk to you when I get back from Wimbledon, everybody.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.